Good evening, you guys. T2 Romeo, India Whiskey here. Sorry I'm late, and I'm going to have to leave you guys at 10 o'clock tonight, but quite possibly somebody else, like John, will take over after that. This is the technical net. I'm T2 Romeo, India Whiskey. You'll also hear John, TC2 WGB. You'll hear Paul, WS2N. And you'll also hear Hal, K6DPZ. That group of guys tries to assemble this enthusiastic crew of the tri-state area near New York City, as well as outer areas, by way of internet connections. What is that now? IRLP and EchoLink. The main purpose of the technical net is a relatively informal kind of education. We don't stick to great formality here. You'll see we have a sort of a loose schedule. People will sometimes get offended because we violate that schedule depending on we go with the flow, if you know what I mean. If there's a good set of questions being discussed, let me drop. If somebody's got a really hot subject, then whatever we're supposed to be doing during that period can easily get extended. So don't be offended by that when you see it happen. As I said, we're not real heavy on structure. I don't demand that every single person refer everything back to the net control operator, that he's in command. I don't insist on that. If this was Ares or one of those kinds of nets where a very specific practice for emergency conditions are required, yes, that's very valid in that area. That's not what this is. During the first hour, we take questions from people who do have a question or a comment. They sign in by giving that crew your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give you my name, even though I'm supposed to remember you. I'm very forgetful on names. I never remember a name, but I always forget a face. And the word yes. Yes means you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in to let us know that you're listening. The TechNet has been around now for, in September, it will be its 32nd year, 32 years. This, for instance, is TechNet number 1,519. After that much time, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be confirmed anymore. So, let me jump one more time. So we're going to take check-ins of people who do have a question or a comment. Please give me your call letters and name and the word yes right now. K2RI, I'll be listening.
WB2 Alpha Hotel Kilo. Yes, for a question. My name is John.
Okay, Alpha Hotel Kilo. We got John so far. Anyone else?
Whiskey 2 Bravo Mike Papa with an educational announcement, please.
Okay, WDMP, we got you. Anyone else?
Second to Leo, is it okay if I just say hello?
We're going to let you do that. There's a small fee in charge, a small fee in fault, Rich. Okay, so far with real check-ins, we've got John and Joe so far. One more call. Anyone else with a check-in with a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name right now. I think that was KE2EJ with a whole lot of feedback. Is that true, Eric?
Yeah, sorry about that, Dick. Yes. I have a yes for you.
Okay. Go easy with us. These broadcast guys get some pretty deep technical subjects sometimes. I'm half joking with him. One last call. Anyone else with a question or a comment for the net? Give me your call letters right now. And name.
Sorry, Dick. I'm not sure if you got me. Name here is Joe from Harrison, New York. KC2, Queen Yankee Whiskey, and no.
Okay, we got you, Joe, with a no. Queen Yankee Whiskey. And I think I heard an AC2 earlier. I wonder if that person was checking in. K2LIW listening. Okay, AC2IS. Extremely weak signal. We're going to have to go out there and put an antenna on your chimney one of these days. Okay. Joe, go right ahead with your announcement. W2BMP, K2RIW.
Thanks, Dick. Just a reminder to everybody that Limark is going to be offering their general license class starting October 1st. It's web-based, instructor-led. Everybody is welcome. There is no charge, of course, for the class. We meet for 8 sessions, and that's starting October 1st. Anybody interested, please email me at education@limark.org. Thanks for the break, Dick. Have a nice day.
Great, fine, Joe. Joe, the very next event coming up with Limark probably is a indoor flea market, I'm guessing. Any idea what date that is that we can put on our calendar? You got it, Joe?
Dick, hold on. I think it's October 26th, we believe. But I'll look that up, and I'll get right back to you, Dick.
Okay, until further notice, it's October 26th. Alrighty. And last week, or the week before, we had Joe DeVee to RYY sign in. We didn't get to him in time. When Joe signs up, because he's your previous sign in, and we didn't get to him, he'll go to the head of the line whenever he signs in. Alrighty, John, WB2 AHK, Alpha Hotel Kilo, K2RIW. My name is Dick, and fire away with your questions, sir.
Thank you, Dick. This is John. My call sign is Kilowatt Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform. My question was for single sideband use and AM use on the 2 meter frequency.
My goodness, did I mix up the call that bad? I thought there was someone who signed in earlier with the name John, with the call letters, the suffix of Alpha Hotel Kilo. Did I confuse it that bad?
Bravo, Mike Papa, with an update.
Go ahead, Joe.
Dick, I just confirmed that date for the Limark flea market, and that is October 26th, sir.
Okay, glad to have that confirmation, John. Joe, thank you. Okay, John, I must have really mixed up that call letter something fierce. Foxtrot Delta Kilo. Make sure you wait for the beeps and then proceed with your question, sir. And please repeat your question because I was confused.
Okay, not a problem, Dick. It's Foxtrot Quebec United. Well, the question was about 2 meter for single sideband and AM modulation use on the 2 meter frequency. I wasn't really able to find much online from the ARRL website for AM use, except for what's observed, and for single sideband use as well. But any ideas of what frequencies are most commonly used, and at whatever times during the day or during the week, is my question.
Yeah, I've done a fair amount of 2 meter work, although a lot more 432 work and a fair amount of 10 gig work. 432 from my point of view. At Christian, 2 meters, almost everyone knows the calling frequency is 144-200. And that's where you're supposed to call your CQs or call direct contest or whatever, but not dwell there. You're supposed to just meet there and say, okay, I'm going to go up 10 or go down 20 kilohertz, and we'll continue the conversation. And that is... by gentleman's agreement, 98% single sideband. Between 144.0 and 144.100, in theory, is allocated to Morse code. 144.100 to 144, let me call it 250, is by gentleman's agreement almost purely single sideband. Horizontally polarized, single sideband. Don't let that horizontal polarization scare you. You probably heard my experiment of when I used to drive to Utica, New York, working at Romare Development Center with my automobile, and I had a horizontally and vertically polarized pair of antennas on the roof of the car and a relay inside where I could flip back and forth between the two. And I was holding long-range single sideband QSOs with guys who were using purely horizontal polarization on their end, and when I flipped back and forth between horizontal and vertical, they sounded identical. Until I get up to a high overlook, you know, where I had a long view of the horizon, then the horizontal sounded louder. So by the time the signal scatters through your local trees, water towers, and everything else. The polarization becomes reasonably random. The bottom line of that is, let me drop it. If you own a good single sideband rig, a 2 meter all mode, which has single sideband capability, and you only got a vertical antenna, and you think no one's going to hear you on sideband, they will. You will get answers. Know also that almost all 2 meter all mode rigs in the sideband mode have something like the 10 to 15 decibel noise figure. That's a fancy way of saying it's a fairly dead receiver. You put a gas fed preamplifier in front of it with a 1 dB or a half dB noise figure, and all of a sudden you'll be amazed how much activity there is on 2 meter sideband. Simplex, no repeaters. I mean, with just a simple Yagi on the chimney of the house, unless you're living in a valley, on sideband 2 meters, you'll talk to almost all of New Jersey, quite a bit of Maryland and Delaware, a little bit into Pennsylvania, Connecticut for sure, Rhode Island. Most of the time you'll get into Massachusetts. 50% of the time you'll be getting into Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine on sideband simplex, with not necessarily a band opening. Sideband has got a hell of a lot more sensitivity and range than FM. Sideband is used on 144, 260, 260, 250, 260, 270 during the 10 gig contest. That's the calling frequency. People go on that frequency and say, I'm on Mount Equinox and I'm on 10 gigahertz looking for QSOs. And so anybody who hears me on 144, 260 sideband, call me here. And then we'll line up a QSO on 10.368 gigahertz. And by each guy on each end knowing what mountain they're on, they know how to aim their antennas. You're typically using a 3-degree beamwidth antenna on 10 gigs, therefore you've got to aim it correctly. Now, when it comes to AM on 2 meters, my understanding is that, let me drop. I don't think you're violating any FCC rules if you use AM anywhere in the 144 to 145 megahertz region. There's not very many people to talk to. AM is not very popular, but you can do it. I don't think you're violating any rules. Also, there are, somebody just said, Dick, go ahead, who is that?
Yeah, me. I just wanted to let you know that Hal operates a AM repeater. You go in AM, come out AM. You can also go in FM and come out AM. So, there is AM that is active in the neighborhood. And by the way, you can operate AM anywhere except in the CW portion of the band.
You could do that. By the way, the so-called dinosaur repeater is what Hal calls it, which is AM in and AM out, that repeater on, what frequency is that on, if you happen to know, Eric, go ahead.
I'm not sure what building they're on, but they're in Queens.
Yeah, what frequency is that on?
Don't quote me. I believe it's 145 in, 145 one, I forget, and the output's 146.
Okay, sounds like Rich also knows the frequency. What's the frequency of the dinosaur repeater of Hal? I'm a little bit amazed that Hal didn't sign in to tell us that. You got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I'm not currently on it, but yes, it's 145.0 in, 146.0 out. And I want to correct you on one thing, Dick. 144.0 to 144.1 by FCC law is A1 emission only. It's not gentleman's agreement.
Good to know, Rich. Thank you. All right, so Morse code only, 144.0 to 144.100. Almost anywhere in there other than 144.100 and up, you're allowed to run sideband, you're allowed to run AM. In theory, you're not breaking any rules if you ran 146.85 AM. I'd recommend you don't do it. I think you're not violating FCC rules, but let's call it gentleman's agreement. When you've got repeaters in the
146 to 148 region. You run AM there, except for some private simplex frequency. I think people are going to get unhappy with you. AM, if you use the region, let me think now. You do have a set of frequencies set aside for beacons. And I think those beacons are in the vicinity of 144, 300 to 144, 500, in that region. I'm not sure the exact frequency where a lot of people use beacons. Again, if you use AM or any other kind of high duty factor transmitters there, I think you'll make yourself unhappy because people want to be able to hear these weak beacons and find out what the propagation is like. Let me drop. Eric, very, very low in the background. I'm hearing a little bit of music. Wonder how that's getting through our machine tonight. So people can correct me on that. So what I think is going on here, John, is that you've got a rig with AM and you'd like to try it out. Maybe you have an all-mode rig. And as I said, the vast majority of the single sideband capable rigs, all 2-meter all-mode rigs, you do a test of their sensitivity, you find out they've got 10 to 15 decibel noise figure. They're front-end gain-starved. The reason for that is they're manufactured primarily for Japan use. In Japan, you've got a ham radio operator in every street corner, so to speak, and so all-load characteristics are more important than extreme sensitivity in that environment. So they make sure that there is as little as possible front-end gain. You add a preamplifier in front of a 2-meter all-mode rig, and you'll hear all kinds of signals you didn't previously hear. So, and the fact that you've got a purely vertical antenna, and you want to try sideband, don't let that stop you. People will hear you. You'll just be a little bit weaker than you would be if you were running a real horizontally polarized antenna. That's some of the information. Let me pass it back to you, John, and drag your feet in case other people with more smarts in this area want to give us their opinions. So, I think it's Whiskey Delta 2 Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, if I didn't get it wrong again, but with a little bit of delay. KQLIW in the TechNet.
W2AKM
the sideband. AKM. Sideband. Give us your information about sideband. Put it right ahead. Start with your name, sir.
Yeah, Whiskey 2 Able Kilo Echo. Handle is George. Over at Page, just wanted to comment on the NERL statements here. Where 144.2.1 through 144.2 is for EME and weak single sideband, and general single sideband operation is 144.2 through 144.275.
Very fine, George. And George, 0.275 to the next 300 or 400 KC, is that the region that's been set aside for 2-meter beacons? Back to you, George.
0.200 to 0.275, and the weak signal of our 0.1 to 0.2.
The NERL says that 275 to 3 is propagation beacon.
Okay, 0.275 to 0.3 is beacons. And if you've got a good low noise preamplifier in front of your sideband rig, and you tune across that region, on a good day you'll hear quite a few beacons, and almost all of them will, first of all, they send their call letters, but they also give their grid square, Fox November 30 Alpha Kilo or something like that, if you know what I mean, all in Morse code, and that allows you to figure out within a couple of miles where they're located, in which case you can use the right kind of computer program to find out exactly how many airline miles there is between your QTH and that beacon. And that'll give you good information about what the propagation is like. Sometimes during this repeater operation, during the TechNet, I hear Harry, WA1VVH, who's right at the Massachusetts-Vermont border, a good number of miles away. And there are times when this machine is heard very well up there. However, he's got some unusual equipment. You go to QRZ.com and you look up WA1 Victor Victor Hotel and just look at the photographs of his beautiful Rhone 55 tower. And I think it's 180 feet tall with an array of 2-meter Yagis, among other things, on it. So the great range that he gets is partially due to his hardware.
Also, another guy with a lot of 2 meter equipment capability is Whiskey Hotel. Here we go. WA1. My goodness, I'm having trouble thinking of the guy in Lebanon, Maine. WHF. Mine's going blank tonight. But this particular guy in Maine has a 200 foot high tower with about 5 2-meter beams stacked along it, aimed down the East Coast. And so,
Repeater, timeout.
That's K1WHS, Dick Oline.
Glad you reminded me. Good old Dave Oline, K1WHS. Hold on, not getting senile. And the, you Google his call letters on QIZ.com. You go to QIZ.com and plug in his call letters. I'm pretty sure he's got pictures of that array. So there's some pretty serious people with 2 meter equipment, sideband capable out there for very long range. So that's some of the information I think you're looking for, John. Fox Red Quebec uniform, go right ahead. Make sure you wait for the beeps. K2LIW in the tech van.
Thank you very much, Dick. KD2FQU. That is a lot of information. I really do appreciate that. The UPI I have is A50 from Yaesu, and I'm running a mag mount with a 2 meter spike on my roof, 19 inch. And I'm looking to upgrade the antenna to the 3 footer that's available from Larson. I still have yet to permanently mount it onto the car, but the AM frequency usage, I was able to write down the single sideband, but the AM frequency usage, that's from 200 up to 275 or 200 up to 300, 200 up to 275 on the 144.
I'm not sure there is an officially allocated set of frequencies that are set aside specifically for AM. Legally, you can put AM in anywhere and make an arrangement with somebody that, hey, I'm going to talk to you on AM at this time. I don't think there's an official set of frequencies set aside specifically for AM. Anybody out there hearing my voice, correct me on that if I'm wrong. Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW on the TechNet.
W2AK, you are correct.
Yeah, so you can use AM almost anywhere. Now, whether or not you're going to be interfering with somebody's beacon, his sideband calling frequency, his own private sideband calling frequency, so to speak, somebody's repeater, you could get yourself into a little bit of trouble. You don't own the frequency, if you know what I mean. So if somebody tells you that, hey, we normally use this frequency for such and such, don't give them any flack on that. In theory, they came first. AM is jokingly called antique modulation for a whole bunch of reasons. When it comes to its range compared to sideband, there's a huge difference. And that makes a beautiful technical discussion itself. In fact, during my engineering degree at Pratt Institute, one of the subjects I was asked to give a report on the advantage of sideband over AM and what's the real difference in threshold and where is it all coming from. Why does the hardware behave so much better? It turns out that as the signal gets weaker and weaker, the receiver eventually doesn't get enough of the carrier, so to speak, to beat the sidebands against in order to really give you the envelope detection that you and I call audio. Whereas in a sideband receiver with the right kind of detector that's built inside, it supplies that local oscillator. That's what nothing but the sidebands required. That gives you a huge threshold improvement. So AM has only one slight advantage. Let me drop it. There are a group of guys on 80 meters that set aside their own little private frequency where they meet and periodically use amplitude modulation. Most of these guys are using a 1,000-watt transmitter, 500 watts of audio is the audio modulator on that 1,000-watt transmitter. And when they come on the air, they sound like a broadcast station. You hear the clunk when the carrier gets turned on, and the audio itself sounds like high fidelity, and it's wide as all heck. as far as you know, tuning above and below because they're so strong and you can still hear them. And so it does have a nice mellow sound. Sideband, if it's not very carefully tuned, it's got kind of a an artificial sound, a speech synthesized sound to it, if you know what I mean. Sideband, if it's really done correctly, if the carrier you inject has the right, exactly the right frequency and exactly the right phase, there is no difference between the quality that's capable of sideband and AM. The telephone circuits that were used for years with the 2.3 gigahertz microwave repeater sites that were every 30 miles across the real estate, they were multiple sideband, multiple subcarrier sideband receivers. Now, when it comes to getting better sideband reception, I'll give you one other hint, John. Let me drop. Assuming you've got a rig that's capable of sideband capability, a 2 meter all mode, for instance, and recognize the fact that you need a GANSFET preamplifier in front of it to get full sensitivity. And depending on how many watts it puts out, you've got to be able to bypass that preamplifier. The a very popular one is Vance Receiver Research. Let's see now, the one that's made for 2 meters. I'm holding on to it right now. And it's got the model number of Sierra Papa 144 Victor Delta Golf. Sierra Papa 144 Victor Delta Golf. That is a 2 meter Advanced Receiver Research, very respected GANSFET preamplifier, which has the bypass relay built into it. And it does have automatic switching. That's the catch. There's a catch to that. Don't go beyond 30 watts of peak envelope power into that thing. Otherwise, that tiny little relay inside will go west on you. So if you've got a 40 watt or a 50 watt or a 100 watt peak envelope power rig, you've got to find some other way of bypassing the preamplifier when you're transmitting. And the good sideband receiver, here we go, good sideband antenna, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 element Yagi, doesn't have to be expensive. If you go to the website of www.WhiskeyAlpha5VictorJulietBravo.com, WhiskeyAlpha5VictorJulietBravo.com, Kent in Dallas, Texas, sells these beautiful printed circuits. Let me drop them. These beautiful printed circuit antennas for the VHF, UHF frequencies. But if you go to the second or third page of that website, he will show you how to build coat hanger antennas, is what he calls them, or cheap antennas. In other words, by taking coat hanger wire on a strip of wood acting as the boom, you can easily construct a 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15 element Yagi. It'll cost you about the most expensive part will be the connector you put on the coax cable that goes to the driven element, and the driven element's made out of coat hanger wire, literally. And he's got a patent on that way of feeding the coat hanger. It's got a very fancy, simple little loop to the driven element, which does a beautiful job of feeding the whole Don Yagi. So for a couple of dollars, you can have yourself a Yagi antenna on 2 meter sideband with close to state-of-the-art capability, and build an array of them if you want. Put up put up 4 or 6 of those Yagis, and now you're really going to find out what sideband is capable of doing. And once you do, you're going to say, wow, how come no one has told me about this before? So back to you, John. Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot, Quebec Uniform, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, K2RIW, KD2F2U. Could you repeat the website again? I got Whiskey Alpha 5. I wasn't able to catch the last bit.
Yeah, that's a beautiful website that Kent has had there for at least 5 years. Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo. Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor Juliet Bravo. .com. And it used to be very easy to find his second or third page, so to speak. You'll have to fiddle around with the website. But know that there is a page, second or third page, so to speak, in which he shows you so-called cheap Yagis made out of coat hanger wire and a slat of wood for the boom. So for very inexpensive, if you want to experiment before, you know, laying down your money and buying a Force 12 antenna where you lay down some good money, but you're getting a very sturdy, high-performance 2-meter Yagi. Without laying down a whole lot of money, you can find out if 2-meter sideband is for you by building an array of these coat hanger wire antennas and make them horizontally polarized. They're very easy to tune up, very nice design, if you know what I mean. Very inexpensive components, and it's a way to get your feet wet and find out how good sideband with a horizontally polarized Yagi it really is. Put that on a rotator on the chimney of the house. That's an extremely good beginning. Later on, put it on a higher structure, some kind of a tower, and you'll find out what 2 meters is really capable of doing. Take a look at that website of Whiskey Alpha 1, Victor Hotel. Take a look at his tower, and you'll start dreaming. The real point is that the serious guys on ham radio, in my opinion, eventually put up a tower. Whether it be crank up, tilt over, self-standing guide. I prefer guide towers because I like hardline cable because I'm a VHF, UHF person. But once you put up a tower and you realize the kind of extra range you can get and the bragging rights you get, and as you're slowly constructing it and there's no big hurry, and you drive further and further away from your house and you see how far away you can see your tower above the trees, and you start putting antennas on and start getting some real good range, to me, that's the interesting part. I like propagation. I like antenna experimenting. And having a tower to do it on makes a big difference. Quite often we get asked on the TechNet, let me drop it. We get asked a general question, whereas if I buy a zillion-dollar antenna and only mount it 10 feet off the ground, or if I build a very simple coat hanger ground plane antenna and mount it on top of the tower, which one will give you more performance? And the bottom line is, when it comes to VHF operation, there are three things to make an antenna work well. Altitude. You got to clear the trees if you want really state-of-the-art performance. And then a little bit beyond that, you want to clear the local buildings and water towers and so on. But 2 meters used to be considered a super high frequency. The guys on 10 gigs consider it their second IF, if you know what I mean. To them, it's not even a frequency, but with the right kind of antennas up in the air, the right kind of preamplifier, and 50 watts, so to speak, of clean single sideband, you'll be amazed what kind of range you can get summer, winter, spring, and fall on sideband on 2 meters. And so, as you make these discoveries, as you build this hardware, come back periodically and tell us how it goes, John, because I think there are other people sitting on the threshold where you are and deciding whether or not they should put their toe in the water. KD2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2LIW, this is KD2FQU. Thank you very much. I have all the information down. When I get home, I will get a chance to look through it. And at some point, I will get a tower set up. I'm stuck right now with a mobile setup. But thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And there is a WB2AHK. Dude,
I thought there was. And so, John, number one, AHK, we're going to go to you next. One other thing you should know about Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, and that is even the guys who, you know, have drastic restrictions because of their homeowner association or the apartment they live in, and they can't put up antennas. A significant number of guys will periodically go to a mountaintop somewhere with their mobile rig. And some of them have got some pretty big antennas on their mobile rig. Or ways of taking the antenna out of the trunk of the car and assembling it and putting up a temporary tower. And so mountaintopping operation on 2 meters and 432 used to be a hell of a lot of fun. So let's go over to John number one, who somehow got bypassed. And so because there was more than one John signing in, somebody convinced me that I had completely forgotten the call letters. Whiskey 2, I think it is. Alpha Hotel Kilowatt. K2LIW. Sorry to delay you so much, John. Go ahead.
Okay, it's WB2, America Hotel Kilo. My name is Chet. I'm in Floral Park, Long Island. Hi, everybody. I have a quick question. I bought a used Kenwood TM732A dual band or radio, and I'm starting to put it into mobile, and I want to use an amplified speaker. I'm kind of hearing impaired, and I know that the output of the TM732 has two different channels, U and V, speaker outputs with jacks on the back. Is there a problem technically, or will I hurt anything by putting them together in a Y connection and feeding the single channel amplified speaker? Would that hurt the output transistors of the radio? Is that a general and fast rule? What do you think? Over.
Let's make sure I understand the question. First of all, the TM732, I should be familiar with it, and I'm not. And it's got a U and a V connector on the back. At first, I would say, okay, are these both SO239 coaxial connectors? And one, the U stands for UHF, and the V stands for VHF, 2 meters and 440, for instance. Is that what we're talking about? But then you're talking about loudspeaker connections, which sounds like audio, so I'm a little confused. So run that by again, Chester. WB2EHK, K2LIW in the tech net.
Okay, Dick, I'm sorry, I didn't explain it correctly. It said we're speaking simply speaker output audio. The dual band has two separate jacks on the back for U and V, two different channels. Would there be a problem feeding them together in a Y connection to the input of the amplified speaker? Would that be okay? I want to put two channels into one audio. I'm not talking about RF. I don't understand that. Putting another audio together. Over.
Light them with forum resistance.
Okay, so what I think Eric is suggesting is that from each one of those connectors, you put a 4-ohm resistor, bring the two 4-ohm resistors together, and then go to the amplified external speaker. Let's let Eric give us some more details on that. So by way of those 4-ohm resistors, you're making sure that each audio output amplifier doesn't see a short circuit of the other one, so to speak. Real good audio output amplifiers have got a whole lot of negative feedback. Therefore, when you look back into them, they're kind of a short circuit. So therefore, if audio is trying to come out of the U connector and the V connector is not trying to produce audio, therefore it might be trying to create a short circuit. And therefore, the U amplifier could be made unhappy by way of the 4-ohm resistors. Everybody is happy. That's my understanding. Let me turn it over to Eric to give us a confirmation on that. And speak slowly and tell us everything you know about that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RA to be in the tech net.
Next afterwards.
Okay, Eric first, and then we'll get the comment. You got it, Eric.
Yeah, K2RW, K2J. They use, actually I'm looking at the, starting to look at the manual now. Generally they use a packet power amplifier, which is usually a totem, you know, push-pull on the outputs, and it's really wise to isolate them with form resistors. You can, in fact, wire them, but I don't really think that's a good idea. And the reason why I'm looking at the manual is Kenwood, like I have a D700 and a tri-banded, and they provide not only separate outputs for each band, but they also provide a mixed output, which is actually another output amplifier with resistive mixers that go to it. So the fact that his is only two band, I'm not sure that they have. I'm pretty sure that they have a regular speaker. I'm going to look at the manual. But that's what I generally do to keep the output transistors in the little package that I see very happy. And 4 ohms is fine. If you want to, if you're using an amplified speaker, you could even use 8 ohms. So that way, if one looks like a short, the other one sees 8 ohms. So, you know, you're never actually shorting the output out. K2RW, K2J.
Good information, Eric, and thank you. The person who said comment, please give us your full call letters, then your name, and then proceed with your comment. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Hey, how you doing, Dick? Mark, N2FLF. You hear me okay?
Hearing Mark, N2FLF, very well. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks.
Yeah, I have a 733, and it's probably the same setup. If I remember correctly, you can, there's two jacks of speakers, one for UHF, one for VHF, but I believe one of them, I don't remember which one, does both at the same time, so you only need to plug in one plug into that radio to hear both bands out of the amplified speaker. And that's my comment, and 2FLF.
2EO, Jake.
Now, let me go back to Mark for a minute before I go pick up a Rich. Did you find that out from the owner's manual? In other words, I think you're telling me, Mark, that there is a section of the owner's manual explaining the fact that the U and the V give you separate outputs if you desire it, but one of them really gives you both audios if you set the if you program the rig the right way. That's a bunch of guesses on my part. I'm hoping the owner's manual makes that clearer. N2FLF, K2RIW.
Yeah, I'm sure it's explained in the manual, but I have three of these things in the cars, and I only have one speaker, and I get both bands. No problem.
When you've got three of those rigs in the car, out of curiosity, how do you get all three rigs going to one particular loudspeaker? Would you have three separate loudspeakers? Back to you, Mark.
Yeah, this way I can talk to myself in the car, you know? Pick up a mic and pick up the other one. No, three separate cars. You know that.
Well, don't laugh. There are guys I know who have got six and seven rigs in the same vehicle. And they can listen to a whole lot of bands and talk to a whole lot of bands simultaneously. I thought you were one of those. Oh, you got three of those rigs in three separate cars. I should know that, but I didn't. N2EO, go right ahead with your comment on this one. K2RIW, got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. The gentleman said somewhat hearing impaired. I wanted to let him know Radio Shack makes two different speakers. They look identical. When I use one here, it's black. It does not have an amplifier in it. It's just a regular speaker. It works very well. And I think I paid like $20 or $15 for it. But then they make another one which looks identical to this one, but it's amplified, has a volume control on it, and you put a battery in it. He may want to look for that one, and if it works anything like this one, but with the amplification, it should serve its purpose. He may have trouble finding it because currently Radio Shack is closing. I heard about 1,000 stores are not doing well. So he'd probably be best to go online, radioshack.com, and punch in on the search speaker or amplified speaker. Back to net and 2EO.
WS21.
I heard Paul, and I heard somebody else. With only one call ever came through, but we'll get to you guys. Rich did bring up a very good point. My favorite 2-meter all-mode rig is a Kenwood TR751A. I think it's the model number of the thing. And it's got a tiny little loudspeaker on it. From Radio Shack, I believe, or one of the flea markets, I bought one of these loudspeakers that's in a box that's about a 2-inch. It's a cube about 2 inches on the side. And by way of Velcro, I stuck that to the top of the dashboard of the automobile and plugged that into the back of the audio output of the rig. And a huge improvement in audio quality. Oh, man. I can hear all kinds of things, particularly in the sideband mode, that I wouldn't hear on the tiny little loudspeaker that's on this mobile rig. So putting a good loudspeaker in a car is definitely a good thing to do, with or without amplification. Let's see what Paul's got to say on all of the above. WS2N, K2RIW, go ahead, Paul.
I think I have the speaker that Rich doesn't have, but he's the one he was talking about, the one who put batteries. last 10 years I've had it hooked up.
Listening on the input frequency, 144.146.250. In other words, go to the reverse mode and tell us what carrier you're hearing, how strong it is, and report it to RFI@LIMOC.org. And so we're collecting those reports, and it's helping quite a bit locate the source of the intentional interference that we're hearing. So to repeat what Paul was saying, some of these Radio Shack speakers do come with battery. Attempting to give me trouble. They come with batteries for amplification, or there's probably a version where you can plug it into the 12-volt cigarette lighter. But having a large enough loudspeaker, even if it's only 2 inches in diameter in the right kind of an enclosure inside of an automobile, can give you a hell of a lot higher quality audio than you get out of the tiny loudspeakers that many of our mobile rigs contain. The mobile rig antenna, mobile rig audio, sometimes the speaker's aimed in the wrong direction because it's so darn small and it doesn't have the right kind of a baffle. The audio out of it is less than high fidelity, if you know what I mean. I think that's some of what you said, Paul. Let me pass it back to you to fill in the blanks. WS2N, K2RI.
Okay, this is probably a little bit better, my guess. But, yeah, like Antonio said, I have that speaker with one. You put the batteries in, but I don't need it. I leave the batteries for a backup for a power failure, but it does have a wall warden, and I plug it into the wall. And, but I like the treble. It's got volume and treble on it. So, back to you, Dick.
That sounds like a very nice speaker that you're discussing. You bought it from who and roughly how many dollars and roughly what size it is. So tell us how big it is, how many dollars, who you bought it from. I'm hoping it was a Radio Shack product at one time. Unfortunately, many of the Radio Shack products, this year they've got it, next year they don't. WS2N, K2LIW.
Probably should get this online, like Rich said. But 7 inches high and 5 inches wide. I don't know, a couple, two and a half, maybe 3 inches deep. And yeah, Realistic, of course, is the name that they have on it. And I've had it for probably 20 years. So, but they've got a lot of different versions of the same thing. But I'm pretty sure this is the one that Rich was talking about, except he brought up the one with the battery. That's what this has. It says the battery and I plug it into the wall as well. Back to you, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. You came through 100% that time. I think there was another person who wanted to give us information on this subject. Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, with a whole lot of feedback, I heard KE2EJ. Go ahead, Eric.
By the way, the jam is somewhere in Jericho or Webster in that neighborhood. Yeah, what I was going to say is that I run a 6-inch speaker with a very tight reflex enclosure. I've had people come up to the car and ask me if I had an amplified speaker. And it's only a 2-watt output of the radio, so, a good speaker enclosure with a good reflex with a little bit of a slot, so it generates good back pressure, generates a fairly good amount of sound pressure. It's quite loud. You actually don't really have to use an amplified speaker. And you know me, I'm hard of hearing, so when people get into my car, they ask me to turn it down because it's too loud. K2RIW, KE2EJ.
And looks like this is going to be the audio night. So, good loudspeakers with enough size to them and a good baffle. not for amplification. And also, there are a small number of guys who do a fair amount of experimenting on good microphones and speech equalizer networks. So there's a real art form to putting out clean audio. There are a number of rigs, particularly in the sideband mode, where they've only got a 1.8 kilohertz wide sideband filter. And for slicing your signal through the QRM during a contest, that's probably appropriate. But when you're doing real rag chewing, when you want to have a nice sit-down conversation with somebody, you don't really want to listen to audio that's that restricted. To have the full 5 or so KC of audio and nice and flat, good microphones and good loudspeakers, you can make an awful lot more pleasure in operation. Even if you're using a sideband transceiver, still making clean audio for during the times you're not doing a contest operation makes a huge improvement. One of the sideband rigs I used to own, let me drop, was the KLM Echo 70, I think it was. And I believe it has a very narrow sideband filter in there, 2KC wide. And one night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I visited Barry in 2MB, who just happened to have another filter that had the exact same IR frequency. I think it was 455 KC center frequency, or maybe it was 5 megacycles. Anyhow, he happened to have a wider filter, which I obtained from Barry and added it to that rig and made the audio during sideband QSOs, when you're having a rag chew with somebody, wider band audio sounds a lot nicer. There are people who think that the more narrow the sideband filter is, the better. During contest, maybe that's true. Heavy speech clipping and super narrow band, it'd make human voice sound like it's been artificially synthesized by a robot, if you know what I mean. That's not the way we'd like to do it. Anybody with any further comments on all of the above, give me a call that is right now, K2LAW in the tech nest.
Dick, I remember that. That was a 7.8 megahertz center frequency filter. My short-term memory is terrible. My long-term memory is great.
Yeah, well done, Rich. I'm now remembering it also. 7.8 megs is one of the slightly standard frequencies for sideband filters. I think, while we're at it, Rich, the really high quality, what were they now called? The Collins filters that were not crystal. There was some other exotic technique for making a Collins filter, where arguably the world's best filter with a mechanical filter. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank goodness somebody told me. So the mechanical filter of Collins with brick wall, steep sides to it, extremely flat response over just the right bandwidth. What was the center frequency of those? I vaguely remember 9 or 9.5 megs. I'll bet you they're still a very expensive item on the on eBay. Those are the mechanical filters of Collins, which arguably are the world's best filters ever made. I think some of the modern day digital signal processing techniques can probably come close to that performance, but in the old days, Collins are the only people who really knew how to make filters. M2EO, K2LIW.
Dick, M2EO. Well, I'm proud to say I own a 7584, which was all redone by Howard Mills in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. He beat blasted the paint. He sprayed it, baked it, re-silkscreened the front, and basically built it from the ground up. It has three filters. What do I got? The mechanical filters, 6KC, 2.4, and the other one is a 500 cycle filter.
What was the center frequency of those mechanical filters, if you happen to remember, Rich? And make me a guess. How many dollars are they selling for these days because they're considered such valuable items? And I'm guessing when you're holding a rag chew guy and you went over to the 6KCY filter, I bet it sounded high fidelity. N2EO, K2LIW.
The 455 kilohertz Colin, the Serpent, I forget which one. The other two are replacements. They're being made. I forget the name of the company. He was, I'm still in business. He was making them for the Collins. They were 100-something bucks a piece. And I bought them. They're as good, or they seem to be as good as the originals. And also, you brought up that Echo 70. I had one of those, Dick. And one of the things I did to it, I mounted two SMA connectors on the back, and I disconnected the line between the antenna relay and injected a preamp there. It made a big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, this Echo 70, let me drop it. KLM was the name of the company, which really was Mike Stoll, K6MYC, had this company in California where he was importing these Echo 70s, Southeast Asia made 432 megacycle rig with crystal plexing. I think it only covered 432 to 432.2 with a bunch of different crystals, and you had a fine tuning knob on it. A little bit hokey to use the rig, but it gave you a lot of 2 meter, here we go, 432 sideband for the money. A very small package, mobile rig. Its only other problem was that it really didn't have the right amount of voltage regulation inside, so that as you talked on sideband, it did have a little bit of residual FM out of that rig. And various people made other modifications where they put in a better voltage regulator because it was the voltage changing during the sideband transmission. I think it had 30 watts of output, peak envelope power, or maybe it was only 10. Anyhow, during the peaks of sideband, when it was drawing high current, the voltage internally would drop a little bit, therefore the frequency would switch a little bit. So it had this characteristic of residual FM. But that rig in its day gave you a lot for the money and for the size. It wasn't very expensive, as I remember. And that was the rig that I was using to transmit single sideband 480 miles down to K4CAW in Greensboro, North Carolina, 200 miles inland. I had a schedule with him. Let me drop. I had a schedule with him every Tuesday night from 7:30 to 8 o'clock or 7 to 7:30, whatever it was. Summer, winter, spring, fall. We did that for 4.5 years. We just couldn't believe 480 airline miles. I mean, from the top of my tower and the top of my little hill here in Huntington, my radio horizon is out there 40 miles. And I'm talking to a guy 480 miles sideband, day in and day out, summer, winter, spring, and fall. We just couldn't believe the signal would go that far. Gives you some idea of what sideband is capable of doing. I'll admit that much of the time I was only getting 90-95% copy because of QSB fades and whatever. And one of the things we also discovered is that during almost every one of those half-hour skids we had every Tuesday night, the signal would peak up 30 dB out of the noise and stay there for about 2 minutes and then go back down. I couldn't figure out what in the world was doing that. And the answer was aircraft reflection. When aircraft flew from Florida to New York or New York to Florida, they flew over the midpoint, mid-Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. was roughly halfway, or was it Annapolis, Maryland? I'm not sure which now. It was exactly halfway between me and Greensboro, North Carolina. So the reflection of the aircraft were giving us a 30 decibel enhancement of signal. And by way of the Doppler shift that we heard with that, we eventually figured out what was going on. But that observation led me to believe that an awful lot of the data that when people study over-the-air tropospheric propagation, forward-propagated tropospheric scatter. You Google those words, you look at some of the past IEEE proceedings on the subject of very long-range, over-the-horizon radio propagation. Let me drop. Where what those scientists did in the past is they would set up a 120-foot high billboard antenna in Massachusetts. I can't think of the name of the place. Round Hill, Massachusetts, and you had a similar antenna 600 miles